Okay, good morning. Right before I get started, I just want to see a show of hands. Who do we have in the room? Teachers or educators? Let me just say educators. That's teachers, administrators, tech specialists. Okay, great. Anybody who's not an educator, maybe you're here with a startup or just a community member. Okay, great. My name is Stephanie Sandifer. I live and work in Houston, Texas. I worked for the Houston Independent School District for a very long time as a teacher. Then I moved up to administration, ended up, before I resigned from the district, I was working at the district office as a curriculum specialist. And now I teach online part-time, but I also have just started a job this past year working part-time for an organization, a nonprofit in Houston that partners with school districts to provide leadership training and instructional coaching types of training. And they hired me as a technology coach, which was a new venture for them. They've not been involved with technology for during their existence. So my job description is still in flux, which is fun and confusing. but for the past several years, I've been going out to the conferences and doing presentations on using technology in the classroom. I do sessions where it's like we just look at a whole bunch of new tools that are out and talk about how those can be used in the classroom. I do sessions on using wikis in the classroom. But inevitably, there's always someone at the end of the session who raises their hand and says, "This is all great, but I only have one computer in my classroom." Or I have no computers in my classroom. Or I've got three computers for all of my students to use, and I've got 30 or 40 kids in the room. And when that first started happening to me, I didn't really have a whole lot of answers other than, okay, just keep thinking through it. Get creative with what you're doing. But it reached a point where I was like, I need to find a solution for this. I need to help people figure out how to make this work, even if they don't have all the latest and greatest new tools in their classroom. And in my work as a technology coach for Houston A+, it's become even more apparent how drastic this situation is. This year, I've gone into classrooms that just astound me, that the lack of technology in those rooms. And if you're here from a district level perspective, if you work at the district level, I can tell you that in my work, one of the things I've noticed is there's a really strong correlation between what the classrooms look like and the existence or the strength of an educational technology department at the district level versus just an IT department. In school districts where they've got a really strong ed tech department, you see a lot more stuff happening in the classrooms. In school districts where there's just an IT or they've merged IT with ed tech, and so there's maybe just one person in IT who's focused on that, I go into schools and there's nothing in the classrooms except maybe the teacher workstation and projector. So I usually start this session, when I do it at conferences not like this one, I usually start with, let's talk about what 21st century learning is. But I'm not going to necessarily start that way this morning, because this is a different conference. So I want to, the other thing that I don't like to do, just to let you know, I don't like lecturing. I don't like standing up here and doing this. I like doing a lot more engaging things. I'd rather us be at tables where I could get all of you working with your table groups. But that's not the situation we have today. But what I do want you to do is turn to a neighbor, one person next to you, or three people next, you know, two or three people together. And I want you to discuss, just for a couple of minutes, compare and contrast the learning experiences you've had here the past few days versus what you're going home to when you leave here today. So let's take a few minutes to do that.
Because you might want to roam. Right. I'll advance your slides. You just nod or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Or say advance the slides. I'll do that.
Okay, thank you. I've got it set up so that if I'm going to be walking around and doing something, I've got it set so I'm not going to touch a slide. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, though. Okay. Have we had some lively discussion here about what we're going home to after 2.5 days of awesome? Oh, look at the new stuff. This is cool. Does anybody want to share? And as a reminder, they are recording, so if you can step up to the microphone. If you don't want to speak out loud, but you still want to share, and I should have mentioned this when I had my earlier slide up, the hashtag for this session is 21CLT. So if you're on Twitter, you can share through Twitter. But if you want to step up to the mic and just share, and we'll take a minute or two to hear from a few of you and some of the discussion you had.
So what I've appreciated is how I can usually access the slides of the presenter on their blog or on their site, and I can follow along on my iPad, and I feel like it's a rapid-fire sharing of ideas and links, and I'm able to even click on those links while they're talking and just be able to search live. It's not a passive experience for me.
Right, right. Hi. Okay.
I'm going to suggest something maybe a little counter, but I think really explicitly answers your question, is in all these sessions, I've learned a ton, mm-hmm. but the only technology that was used to teach me that is a projector and a screen. So, like, I didn't need a tablet in my hand, and I didn't need interactive games to learn this stuff. An effective teacher in the screen, it was great.
Right.
I'm not saying that means we're wasting our time. I'm just pointing out that, you know, a literal answer to your question.
Okay. Anyone else? I will share one thing to follow up on that. One of the things that I've appreciated about this conference, this is by far the most connected conference I have ever attended. And there were a lot of sessions I wanted to go to that I couldn't go to because I was sitting in one room physically. But I had a couple of devices out, and I was following Twitter, and I was able to pick up things, and I was just, I couldn't absorb them, maybe I couldn't click on the links, but I said, okay, that sounds interesting, and I could just favorite them. And then late in the evening, when I'm back in my hotel room, I've been able to go through and look at things. In fact, just kind of going through tweets and going through resources that people have shared, session descriptions for the sessions that I either sat through or found really helpful. I put together a word cloud last night. And what I think is interesting about this word cloud is I like the fact that the two biggest words are students, or students in education. I really like that students is huge. But the other thing that's showing up big, devices, gaming, mobile, technology, open, OER, online. And the point of that is everybody at this conference gets it, right? We get it. We know what it needs to look like. The reality in our classrooms is that in a lot of our schools, they still look like this. When I go out to some of the schools that we work with, I actually get really excited if I walk into a classroom that looks like this. Because at least they're not in rows anymore. At least there's an opportunity there for the teacher to have the students work with in pairs or in small groups. But in some there's still what's still missing there is that the connectedness piece beyond the walls of the classroom. And then, obviously in that image, we don't see the technology. Now, here's something else that I see. Now, this actually is what you just described. What we've done here this week is everyone's sitting in the room, and the teacher is up here with, drawing everyone's attention to this one device. Now, on the other hand, a lot of the sessions I've sat through, you just look around, and it's like device, 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 device. And in some cases, people have two devices in hand. And that's how I've had a laptop and my phone in my hand through most of the sessions that I sat through this week. And what frustrates me about this when I go out is that there are creative solutions to get the technology out of the hands of the teacher and get it into the hands of the students. And there are a lot of reasons why that's not happening. Here in Texas, how many of you are, this is your home, you're in Texas, okay. What stops a lot of our teachers from being really creative? Louder. Right. I don't have time to do that. I don't have time to think outside of the box. We've got benchmarks coming up. I've got to prepare the students for the benchmarks. I've got to prepare the students for the test. And the only way I can do that is just to lecture and do the worksheets or do the practice tests, the practice benchmarks for the district benchmarks. And it's frustrating. But at the same point in time, we can't let the fact that there's no technology in the room prevent us from changing what's happening in the classroom. And this is another point of frustration for me in my work, is that if you think about what instruction can look like, you've got low-tech teacher-centered, and that's what I see a lot of. But even without technology, you can do learner-centered. And I'm going to show, in a few minutes, I'm going to show you some strategies. I usually do this as a much longer workshop and get people very engaged, and we have, you know, just tons of ideas and examples shared. A lot of that's on the wiki, which I shared on the first slide, and I'll give it to you again at the end. So I'm just going to show you a few this morning, but know that there's a lot more on my handouts. But then you can also go low-tech to high-tech without changing the mode of instruction from teacher-centered to learner-centered, and I see a lot of that too, and that's the teacher at the front of the room, the kids are sitting there taking notes in their spiral-bound notebook. Ideally, what we want to get to, and what we've seen a lot of the past couple of days at this conference, is examples of, or tools or resources that we can use to get to the high-tech learner-centered quadrant. But even if you don't have the technology, if I could get a lot of the teachers I work with just down there to learner-centered, I'd be really, really happy. Now, I want to take just a second, because I know there's some folks in the audience, because you raised your hand. You're not educators, but you're here either representing or part of a startup. And if you're thinking, you know, what can I do about this? You're part of a community. Wherever you live, you're part of a community. You can get more involved in your schools, and you can leverage your network to help schools find solutions to change what their schools look like. You know, funding's not going to go up for schools. It's not like we're going to wake up tomorrow and suddenly the state legislature is going to say, "Wow, we just found billions of dollars and we're going to put it in education and let you go buy all the technology you need to get your kids connected." I sat through the session yesterday with Karen Cater from the U.S. Department of EdTech, and I was listening to what they were saying, and I was like, okay, that's great. How soon can we do that? How soon can we have broadband in every zip code? How soon can we have a device in the hand? And literally, it said a device in the hand of every child, and I was like, yeah, let's do it. We can, you know, we can make the decision to go to war and send troops overseas like overnight. But if, you know, if this is a priority, then let's do it. And let's move faster than a 5-year plan, because that 5-year plan doesn't matter to the kids sitting in the classroom today. Especially those high school students, because they're going to be gone. So again, too many classrooms I see look like this lower quadrant. And I hate when Google does that. Okay, sorry about that. That's not supposed to be bunched up. The point of this slide is to say that we've got a lot of stuff out there that gives us a guide for what this needs to look like. And Tony Wagner wrote a book called Global Achievement Gap. And after speaking to hundreds of people in industry, in various industries, he came up with 7 survival skills of what they wanted in their workers for the 21st century, and very few of those things rely on technology. So the message to this is, when we have teachers who say, I can't change what I'm doing in the classroom because I just don't have access to the technology, it's like, yes, you can, because everything that needs to happen doesn't necessarily need to have technology. So let me give you a few solutions, and then I'm going to give you a few minutes to share with one another again. And I'm sorry I left that link up there. I've got a bit.ly link to the wiki spaces. It's bit.ly, so bit.ly. Hang on a second. Let me pull it back up. and then / 21C, and it's LT capital letters, 21 small c, uppercase LT. So raise your hand if you have not heard of flipped classroom. Okay, that's what I thought. There's a lot of debate around flipped, whether it's good or bad or whatever. I think at this point there's a lot of new stuff coming out about this where people are pushing this to a deeper level so that it's not just... somebody tweeted yesterday that somebody used the South by Southwest Edu hashtag and said something about, oh, they just mentioned flip in the session. That's a great idea. And then somebody else tweeted back, somebody who's not here, said, flipped is easy. Just have the kids read the textbook before they come to class. In other words, you don't have to create a video and have the kids watch it at home. And that's great. I've taught in inner city schools, and I know that a lot of our kids don't have a textbook at home because the school doesn't have enough textbooks. So I know that just that solution, it doesn't work. Now, the other thing that comes up against flip it's okay to do that, but what if, again, inner city, what if your kids are going home to a home that doesn't have technology, doesn't have access, and they're not able to watch that video online? I've even had people tell me, educators tell me, well, we tried to set it up so that they could do it after school, but then the coaches complained. Again, we're in Texas. The coaches complained because it cut into their football practice time. So one of the things that I'm stressing with educators now when I talk about this is it can work if you totally change what your classroom looks like, and instead you rethink space, you rethink the model of whole class, and you start setting up a center. You can have one computer in the classroom, and that can be the computer that students go to watch that video if they don't have access at home. And then you're working with smaller groups of students, and you've got students who are at the point where they're doing independent work. So that's Tim Holt wrote a really, really great blog post around this, and I have a link to that in the handouts where he's talking about changing space, but also changing that concept of what happens in the classroom, so it's more a little bit more like the Apple Store, where you've got the Genius Bar, and then you've got places where people can just play with stuff and get a feel for it. And so there are ways to do it so that it's not just read the text or mirroring that concept of read the textbook at home. And then I also put a link just before this session. Somebody posted a link to a presentation on flipped classroom that I thought looked really good, so I put that in the handouts as well. Any of you familiar with critical friends groups? Okay. Critical friends groups were designed... let me flip over here. The link for this is on the wiki page. National School Reform faculty started this concept of critical friends groups. As long as I've been in education, I've heard about them. And what it is, it's a group of educators who come together and they use protocols to learn together. And they're discussion protocols. So it's the idea is like maybe we're going to read a text together, we're just going to read an article together, then we're going to deconstruct that together. It's a powerful way to do adult learning, but it's also a very powerful way to do student learning. And when I started learning CFG protocols, and I actually got trained as a CFG coach, the light bulbs went off in my head. Do this in the classroom. Do this in the classroom with students. Do chalk talks in the classroom with students. Put poster board up on the walls, or the post-it notes, post-it sheets. Use the chalkboard to do some of these protocols. And it's just a way to get people to think about whatever it is they're learning in a deeper, more profound, and very social way. Traditionally, they've worked best face-to-face, but I even know a group of educators who are exploring how to do CFG online, and that emerged from an educator she teaches in a one-room schoolhouse on an island off the coast of Maine. And her colleagues are teachers who teach on other little islands, one-room schoolhouses on islands, so she doesn't have that person next door that she can work with. So she started looking at this as a solution to doing that professional learning in spite of her isolation. So text renderings, there's micro labs, consultancies, it's a way to look at work so that you can do what's nice about protocols is there's a strong structure to it that allows people, everybody gets a voice, everybody engages in the discussion. That image, It's not necessarily kids doing CFG protocols, but that's what CFG looks like at some point in the process. So the link is down there, but again, you can just click on it in the handout. Sure. Sure. Okay, one that I really like is text rendering. Okay, text rendering, you can take a short article, and in text rendering, and then if you when you go to that link, when you click on any of these, it'll download a PDF, which is all of the instructions. So in text rendering, we're all going to read the same article. And then what it's going to ask you to do is underline a sentence that strikes you in the article, something that you find significant. And then, and I'm trying to remember because it's underlined, then it's like circle a phrase, so not a whole sentence, but just a phrase that you think hits towards the essence of the article. And then you're going to box just one word. And then the facilitator, so the teacher, is then going to have the students, either they're doing this in small groups or they're doing this individually, and then you're going to sit there and you're going to chart out. And again, traditionally it's done without technology, but there's a lot of what you can do that you can do a wiki page and put this on here. So you're going to highlight some of the sentences and then the words. And what it basically comes down to is kids or the adults in the room who are doing it, they're responding to the text from a personal perspective. But then when you chart it out, you can start to see, oh, look, 15 of you highlighted that one word. And then that gives you the opportunity to engage in more of a dialogue around the essence of that article. Does that make a little bit more sense? Okay. Chalk Talks, you might put a guiding question up on the wall, and then it's quiet, no one speaks, but everybody's got markers, and they go up, markers or chalk or whatever, and they're responding to that. And what's fun about that one is I might write something, and you may come behind me and write a question to me. You're going to circle what I said and write a question, another statement. So that's kind of like what happens on Twitter, right, or on blogs, but it's done without technology, but it's still engaging students in a dialogue, in a deeper engagement with each other. Come on. My thing. Oh, there we go. Okay. Now, I learned this from a college professor, and when I was working on my master's degree, she gave each one of us one of these little items. And then she proceeded to, for the entire semester, we'd come to class every night or once a week, and in the course of one evening, we would be in about three different groups. Loved this. I ended up adapting this and sharing it. When I was still, at one point, I was a literacy coach on a campus, and I started sharing this with the teachers on my campus when they said, you know, it's just too much trouble to put kids in groups. I'm like, nope. In a 45-minute period, I can put kids in three different groups with this system. So every kid gets one of these. Now, you notice if you count them, this isn't going to work in some of our classrooms where we've got tons of kids, but you can just double it up. So maybe you've got two kids who are orange circle number 9. It's going to be fine. But then the really cool thing is the code down at the bottom. So that's my cheat sheet, so I can quickly say I want them in groups of 5. Well, then I know I can go group by color or even odd shapes, and then I just say that. The kids know what their code is. And it's just a way that just... it's totally random grouping. And this is, I've got this in a PDF form on the wiki. You can click and download it. So feel free to use it. I didn't create it. Like I said, I learned it from a professor. But I love it. And I've used it in professional development as well. When I worked as a curriculum specialist and we were working with other literacy coaches, we started using this with them. And we combined this with CFG protocols. Okay, so again, this is just getting at that point, at that level of student engagement with each other beyond just the sitting and getting lecture. And if you have any questions about that, if you download it and you're confused, feel free to email me and I'll walk you through it. I talked a little bit earlier about the idea of rethinking space, and this is the innovation, discovery, and engagement area. And I know I've got a couple of friends in the audience who can help me out because I can't remember. Ryan Braytag and David Jakes do presentations on this, but I can't remember what school they're at. Is anybody? They're in Chicago, but you know, I don't remember what school they're at. But if you Google that, and you're going to find that image associated with it, you can find a lot more details on this. They created this room. They used Idea Paint. So if you've never heard of Idea Paint, it's very expensive paint that you can put on the wall, and it becomes a white or wipe on, write off, write on, wipe off board. So it's, it just basically creates a white board everywhere. They've got it on columns and on the walls. All of the furniture's on wheels, so they can move stuff around in different configurations. This right here is their Genius Bar. So, you know, they're thinking in terms of, like, the Apple Store. They use it primarily, initially, for professional development, but then teachers started asking, can we bring kids in here? Which is what they were hoping for. They were hoping that it would be a place. And again, this goes to another point that I make, is get teachers engaged in this in their own learning first, and then they'll start to catch on and get it and say, I want to do this in my classroom. I want my classroom to look like this, rather than that slide I showed earlier of the desks and rows. And then here's this is just another image of a classroom with Idea Paint. Look at the tables. Now, I know what's going through everyone's head right now. First of all, I can't afford, if I could afford Idea Paint, I could afford computers, okay? but you could do this with butcher paper, right? Just put the stuff down and let kids write and draw all over it. The other nice thing about this slide is look at where the teacher's at and look what the students are doing. So you've got students working individually, some are working in little groups with each other, and then the teacher's working with a smaller group of students. Again, that model of more personalized learning without... Now, there are some devices on the tables, and I'm thinking those are calculators because that's a math classroom.
I have a question.
Yes?
Is that a public school or is that a private school or charter?
I'm not sure. I don't know. Actually, it looks like it could be, it's not Houston, but it looks like what our kids in Houston look like with just the, you know, the solid color polos and, oh, is it? Okay. So if you didn't hear that, it's Glenbrook North in Illinois. Mark, do you know what kind of school that is?
It's public.
Public? Okay. It's a public school? Okay. Okay, anybody heard of My Fake Wall, or My Fake Book? Fake Wall, Fake Book? Okay, and I don't remember where this originated, because there used to be this wonderful blog post describing this, and now the blog post is gone. But the idea is, the lesson is that you have kids create Facebook accounts for historical characters or fictional characters. I've even seen examples of this, of science teachers using it for kids to create Facebook profiles for minerals or for elements on the periodic table. And the idea behind that is then you're going to figure out who they're friends with, what kind of posts they would post. And there is a site, but it doesn't seem to be working anymore. So there's a Google Doc template that's getting shared around. And if you do have access to technology, great, you can use the Google Doc. If you don't, you can print it out. And again, that link to that Google Doc is on my handouts. Okay, so here's a handwritten one. You could just print it out. What is happening in the process of trying to critically think through what this character would do and be, and what they would say, who they would friend, that's the important part. It's not important that it's done online. It's not important that it's done on paper. It's just important that they go through that thinking process. I had one of our instructional coaches was working with a group of students, and they were trying to set up a... they were saying, God, you know, I'm not looking forward to Friday because we have to do a vocabulary quiz. And I just, you know, she was just like dreading it because she just couldn't think outside of the box. And I said, well, what are you thinking about? She said, well, I could just, you know, have them do the traditional thing. Or, you know, I'm kind of thinking maybe I just have them write sentences with the word in it so I can check their spelling of the word, but then I can also make sure they're using it in the right context. And I said, okay, get some Post-it notes and give them a limit. Don't do 140 characters, but give them a limit of like maybe 25 words in the sentence. Use your board and just have them do Twitter messages to one another using the vocabulary words, and then they can respond to each other. But use that, use the structure of Twitter. But you're using Post-it notes. And she loved it. It was great. It engaged the kids a little bit more, but she still achieved the what she needed to achieve, which was being able to see, could they spell the words correctly? Were they using them correctly in the dialogue that they had with one another? Those are Band-Aids. One of the things I didn't mention when I started off this session is I really don't want to do this session. I would love it if I didn't ever have to do this session again. If we woke up tomorrow and the federal government said, okay, instead of making you test all the kids, here's a bunch of money. Let's put a device in all their hands. Let's connect them. Right. I know. I hear the laughter. Everybody's like, well, yeah, right. And then I would pinch myself because I'd be like, yes, I've got to be dreaming. But right now we need to apply Band-Aids because we don't have those solutions yet. Yes, sir. Yeah, yeah. I could go off on a really big rant right now, but I won't because I know we want to try to talk about workable solutions right now, and that's. But you're right. There's again. Okay, I'll stop. I'm not going to go there. So okay, now I want to turn it over to you. There's the hashtag for Twitter, but if you can. Handicap yourself and don't go to Twitter just yet. Let's take a few minutes, and what we're going to do is I want you to turn to neighbors and talk about some ideas that you have, because I've got ideas. I've got them on my handouts, and I've gotten ideas from other people when I've done this session. But again, we're at a different kind of conference, and I know everybody in this room probably has one idea in their head of what they could share with teachers when they go back. Or what you can do in your classroom when you go back, even if you don't have all of this great technology. So turn to somebody and have a short discussion, and then I'll ask you to share out. And when I say share out, or when I stop you and ask you to share out, you can come up to the microphone and share your ideas, or you can just tweet them out on Twitter. Okay? So let's take a few minutes to do that. Yes? You know what? It has to be capital L, capital T. It's goofy.
L, so small c.
Small c, and then, yeah, I did. If I'd known that Bitly was case sensitive, I wouldn't have done it that way. But when I did it, I was like, okay, that makes sense. And then I did it. I pulled it up on here, and it didn't come up. And I was like, oh. So, but it's capital LT, yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, 2 minute warning. Two minutes. 2 minute warning. Let me have everyone's attention. Okay, at this point in time, if you have an idea and you want to share it on Twitter, feel free to use the hashtag and do that. But if you are ready to come up to the mic and share an idea, and Mark, I just saw your tweet. I love that. Do you want to share it? And just to follow up on that, because when I saw it, I was like, it went back to my art school days. There was Marcel Duchamp, and artists of his time period started something called mail art and or postal art. And artists today still do it. They use postcards. And if you'll be thinking of your ideas that you're going to share, but I've got to show you this because it's too cool. If you've never seen this before, let's see if I can pull it up. Go to images. Oh, that's not it. Hang on. Let me go to Google. Come on, Bing. Yeah, I actually had a couple of professors who would have us do this as a project. So it's postcards, and you're decorating the postcards and putting them in the mail. So I love that. Just do 140 characters and mail them to each other. A little bit slower than Twitter, but that's a great idea. Definitely more thoughtful. And if you get them to, you know, if you can tie in a little art history there and show them examples. But be careful, you know, preview the images before you show them, because again, these were adult artists, and some of the postcards are not necessarily appropriate for K through 12 classrooms. Any other ideas?
Well, piggybacking on the disc for engaging the students, like the Facebook idea, mm-hmm. make your as the character
Okay, there you go. Because you're still having to think critically around the idea of what would they say to this other character outside of the dialogue that's already in the book. What other messages would they send? Any other ideas or thoughts? Yes.
An English teacher along that same line who does text speak for summary. Mm-hmm. They want to type the text anyway, but they want to interview these characters. How does she put the text speak, and then she reverses it. She gets a text that she's put in text speak, and they have to
translate it,
flesh it out.
Oh. That's a good idea. I haven't seen that one. I like that. Okay. Any other? Yes. Okay.
It's actually an introductory lesson. Teaching them how to use blogging.
Mm-hmm.
To teach them how to be thoughtful, how to comment appropriately, and all that stuff.
That's a good idea.
I think you could do that as a really good warm up, and then going with the model of rotating kids to the computer going right forward to contribute to a class blog or something like that.
Right. So they're still, at the same time, they're still all engaged in the writing process,
yes,
and that thinking process. And then they're just taking turns, which you can use that grouping template to say, okay, today everybody that's red is going to take a turn. Tomorrow everybody that's blue is going to take a turn. Yeah. Yes?
Someone in our group shared that she uses dry erase papers on the kids' desks, and they just wipe on the
windows. Oh, that's a good idea. There you go. Test your desk before you do that.
And take pictures of things that are important.
Exactly. Right, yeah. Well, and you know, and on that note too, document it, because if you do have access to some technology, but you don't have a device in every hand, so let's say you have enough access and you have a situation where you can have kids rotate through a computer, you can set up a wiki page for your class, you can be taking those pictures, and or the students can be taking the pictures and building the web pages or the wiki pages with those images, so you're combining both, but they're still having to take turns. Any other ideas? Yes.
I do science professional development for teachers, and one thing in the new text is that everybody has to either notebook or journal.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I'm talking to the teachers about that, the first thing that you would set up is your table of contents. So I asked them what would be comparable today that we have on our computer, that mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then for each journaling one I have, it's a different table of contents. So one is using a desktop,
right.
The other is using an iPad interface, and it's
just cool.
A static kind of model that
right.
has all the, each app is each chapter or each section right. of the journal, and then I did a Facebook page.
Okay.
So
yeah. Okay, cool. And since you do science, are you familiar with Interactive Notebook?
Yes.
The idea of doing... So, does everybody know what interactive notebooks are?
No.
Okay. Raise your hand. Let's see. Show of hands. Okay. Interactive notebooks, spiral-bound notebook. And you might be able to explain this a little bit better than I can, but it's on the right side, you're taking notes, right, from the whatever the teacher's doing, or if you're doing a lab or something, you're taking notes. On the left-hand side, you're processing all of that in whatever way, shape, or form is best for you. You might be drawing diagrams. You might be, I know when we started doing that in Houston, a lot of the science classes were starting to do it, and we had been pushing literacy strategies. So we had students on the left side doing Frayer models and other graphic organizers and things like that.
If you Google Robert Chesbrough, has a great article that outlines that
process.
And gives you a ton of ideas for the left-hand side.
Okay. Oh, cool.
The last name. Yeah. Chesbrough?
Yeah. Okay, if you can write that down for me, because I'd like to see that. Yeah, because I love that idea, because, again, it's low tech, but it's getting kids to think a little bit more deeply and a little bit differently about the content as opposed to just doing sit-and-get lecture. Any other ideas? And I'm kind of scanning tweets here to see if I see anything. And do check the tweets for this, because like Sandy just said a minute ago, she posted the link to blogging using paper, so looking at that. Yes? Right.
Diagrams and everything else. And I can't say that I invented this whole process, but I had a very type A student who she'd come up at the end of class every day and take a picture of all the boards with herself.
some of the kids were like, text it to me. Other kids like, email it to me. And all of a sudden, she had built this network of all these kids, and she was sending out the classroom notes. And
that's so great.
She's just kind of had become the, well, she had become the caretaker of that class.
And right.
She found kids in each of the classes that were willing to do that.
Oh,
some
that's
of the
cool.
Kids don't have phones.
Right.
Some of them that do don't have campus.
Right.
All of our students have email addresses.
Right. Oh, that's great. Well, that ties into, I didn't mention this, but you know, I've got it in some of the notes. If your school, and some schools are starting to do, some districts are starting to now allow that bring your own device, because they realize we're never going to have the money, at least not anytime soon, to put devices in every hand. But you made that good point of not every kid has a phone, and that stops a lot of teachers. Even if they get permission to use devices, use phones in the classroom, I know teachers who are like, not every kid has a phone, so I'm not even going to do it. I'm not even going to go there. But if you put them in groups, they can share. So. Right. Right. We can't keep waiting. We can't. Yeah.
No one's ever going to have a resource. We've dealt with students that don't have all the resources that everyone else.
Right.
The dawn of education, and we have figured out how to work around it.
Right. Yeah. I used to keep pencils on my desk and just give them out to kids because they didn't have pencils. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
That was an illegal operation when she was doing it.
Right. Yeah.
So it was, and then she noticed that I saw her doing it and wasn't upset about it.
Right.
So this had been going on apparently for a little while before I even.
Thank you for that segue to my other point, which ties into what you just said. We can't keep waiting for things to change. And I'm an advocate for asking for forgiveness over asking for permission. I knew a teacher who, when the devices were still banned, and I applauded this teacher for this, she said, to heck with it, grab your cameras. It was a science teacher. She took them outside, and they were taking pictures of leaves and plants and things, and then they came back into the classroom, and I think, I don't know how she did it. Maybe she had them all text the pictures to her or something, and then she put them all up on the screen, and then they had conversation around it. So, you know, it's... And when the principal found out, he didn't care, even though the district's policy was, you know, pick them up and charge them $15 for the device to get it back. Yes?
Well, I just like to play on that. Even if you're not very creative, ask the kids.
Absolutely.
Boring. What can we do with this to make it better? And they're going to give you the best ideas, especially when you
right.
help everyone fund their ideas, then they will add to the class.
Absolutely. Okay. Yes.
I'm a middle school principal, but I've been a high school principal, and I know at the high school level it's very beneficial for each teacher to pose, like if they have a PowerPoint presentation or anything,
right.
Because we have all levels of students from, you know, students with disabilities, students with hard of hearing, all, you know, we have.
Right.
And the parents never complain that way. They say, well, just go to the teacher's website and see if there's any notes or something.
Right.
But bringing that back, other students started posting.
Yeah. Oh, right, right.
And then because students tend to forget, you know, especially if they're on a block schedule, oh, what if
right.
we have for homework?
Oh, yeah, yeah, they, yeah.
Some teachers are very creative about their own website. So
oh, cool.
The maturity level is there,
right.
you know, with high schoolers.
Right.
You know, they got it going on, and some teachers just said, okay, if you were asking that day, just go back.
It's right
that
there.
Day and,
yeah. And then you're a principal, assistant principal.
Yeah.
So that takes me. Oh, let me go back to my slides. Yep, that's my next slide, and we're almost done here. I want to try to get you out a couple of minutes early, kind of like getting out early for lunch, so you can run over there and get your seats for Arnie Duncan if you're going to that. For administrators who are in the audience, what can you do? You can model. You can engage your teacher. You just said engaging students in the dialogue around what can we do differently. Engage your teachers in a dialogue around what you can do differently. On every single campus, there's always at least one teacher who's thinking differently. Engage them in dialogue. Enlist their help as a peer coach. Enlist their help as the innovator, the early adopter, sharing ideas with the rest of the staff, sharing ideas with you. When I was on my administrative path, you know, I went into my to my principal's office one time because I was dean of instruction and he was having me help him plan all the faculty meetings and everything. And I was like, I walked in, I said, don't email me another Word document with the agenda. I said, here, open up your email. So he did, and I said, click on that link, and it was a Google Doc that I had created a template for our agendas. He fell in love with it, and then that's how we started doing the rest of our meeting planning for the rest of the year. We did that. I said, see, there's no file being sent back and forth between us. There's no confusion. And it was just one little bitty simple thing. It wasn't like a big, let's do the whole school improvement plan on Google. But it was just one little thing. Set expectations for this and create the culture that you need on your campus. And even teachers can do this. Teachers can start to change culture just by working with the next door neighbor, the person in the classroom next to you, or your department. Yes? Oh, yay!
Good friends.
Yeah.
Bring your school boards along. They are good yes. people that want to help you. We hear so many times how the school board is stopping right. you, the school board's not supporting this. They're good people that want to help you. Bring them along. You take those great ideas, ask if you can go make a presentation yeah. to your school board. I can almost assure you, your superintendent will be ecstatic. Go make that presentation, and then when you come back to that school board and say,
right.
Right. They'll see what you're doing.
Right.
Bring them along with you and let them and tell them this culture.
Yeah.
And they're not in education.
Educate right.
them.
That's a great point, though. 2 weeks ago, my organization brought in Will Richardson to Houston for 2 days. So day one, we did a workshop. He did a workshop with educators that are in our network of schools. So we had principals, teachers, instructional coordinators there. That night, he did a dinner with bigwigs. So we had, this is all over the Houston area, we had superintendents, we had school board members, we had business community leaders, so people who work for Chevron and, you know, all of these community partners who help the schools and help our organization. And the dinner message he gave them was pretty in your face and pretty blunt in terms of, you know, we are so far behind the curve. If we don't make change tomorrow, we're in trouble. And the next morning, we did a breakfast open to the whole community. And the point you're making about the school board members, after the session, I was talking to some friends of mine who came, some principals I knew, and I see one of the Houston ISD school board members walk up behind them, and she looks at me, and she said, "That was wonderful. Thank you for bringing him." And it hit her. And I was like, yes. And then I found her on Twitter, and I sent her a message, and I said, "Thank you so much for coming to this talk this morning, because you're one of the people that needs to hear that message." So that's thank you for being here. Right. Absolutely. Okay. That looks terrible. Come on. forget the questions. Personal reflections from this morning. Tweet them out. Use that 21CLT. Your reflections and your questions. Thank you again for being here. There's the hashtag again. This is where you can contact me if you have questions about anything. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your ideas, because there were some great ideas shared out this morning. Thank you for sharing on Twitter. And again, if you have questions, you can email me or send them through Twitter or whatever. And enjoy the last session and the barbecue if you're going to that. Thank you.